Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is my audio commentary for the Markets Now presentation, which I gave last night on the 6th of October, 2014. And I'm now addressing my topic for that speech, which is, here's the headline, for stock markets have risks that the quote, sweet spot, unquote, is ending increased. You can find this and open the presentation to coincide with the audio. Okay, well, I'll try to do the best I can to capture the main themes that were covered by delegates as well. But I started with the question, what are the main known risks for stock markets in your opinion? Well, I'll move on and summarize some of these, which had been mentioned also by subscribers in response to that question. But among geopolitical and economic risks, next slide, the war against Islamic State is expensive and divisive, as are sanctions against Putin's expansion of Novorossiya. China's arrivist military strength risks territorial aggression. Labour could win the UK general election in 2015, although I certainly hope not. The US dollar's strength for emerging market borrowers, that's certainly a potential problem. And panic over Ebola? Well, hopefully not, but there's already some, as you know, in Africa. Okay, next slide. Market risks. The US public offerings are at their highest in over a decade. Leverage by hedge funds and traders has soared in the USA. Leverage in other performing stock markets is high. EU risks Japan-style deflation, despite ECB's Mario Draghi. The Fed, as it tries to normalize short-term interest rates, is going to cause some anxiety. And crude oil prices, if they were to spike higher, I think that is a risk that is declining, but we'll see. Bond market yields will rise eventually with GDP growth. So that really covers some of the main risks that I think we have to contend with. These are not forecasts necessarily, but they are things that we need to watch for and understand the implications if and when we see them. Now, I have a chart showing margin debt and the S&P 500 index. I picked this up from Doug Short's site on dshort.com. And you'll notice first that with the S&P 500, he's adjusted that to present day dollar values, which is interesting because the S&P did not quite clear its 1999-2000 highs. But the important point to focus on is the red line. That's the New York Stock Exchange margin debt, and you can see that it's very high. You can also see that the margin debt reaches a peak before the stock markets, and it can be anything from over history a month or two to up to 6 months, but seldom over 6 months. I should put it that way. But debt is a concern. Here's another. There are four slides that he produced, and I think they're all interesting, so I'm showing them. Here we see over a longer time period, but again, you get the same picture. Look how high that real New York Stock Exchange market debt actually is. Next slide. We can go through these fairly quickly. This one He is just, he's not showing it in the S&P in real terms. And look at the negative credit balances, meaning that people are heavily leveraged when those highs. So get the debt equaling leverage. And this is again just emphasizes the risks. And then the last chart on this showing against a background of a reversed S&P 500 index, which he's inverted just so that it tallies with the buildup in those margin levels. So again, puts us puts things well into the well and puts us well in the picture here in terms of margin debt. I think this is an awfully important point because people are saying, well, the stock market isn't as overvalued, Wall Street isn't as overvalued as it was back in 2000. That's true. I think it was about 26 times earnings, and it's a little over 16 in here today. But the leverage is what concerns me more. And when you get a long bull run, as we and very consistent bull run, I mean, we've had a bull market going on now for Wall Street since the second quarter of 2009. But when you get a persistent run, as we saw in the fourth quarter of 2013, and all the way into September of this year, then you get more momentum trading or a build-up in momentum trading, and people, as long as the market is moving strongly, they're confident that they can make more money as they can by building up their leverage, but they're also confident that they can jump out in time. Well, when they do jump out, that's certainly going to impact the market. Then I have the latest chart on the Renaissance Capital from Renaissance Capital showing the IPO filings. This is the number of issues, not the monetary value. And you can see that it's already at the highest level at the beginning of October that we've seen for over a decade, probably well over a decade. And you also know that the Alibaba IPO was absolutely enormous. So the actual monetary amount of the IPOs would be considerably higher than in the previous years shown. Okay, technical warnings. These are signs to watch for among indices. And it's a good well, we're gonna check through the indices in a moment, but first let's just run through these very quickly. Trend acceleration relative to 200-day moving averages. If you get that type of trend acceleration against a rise background of a rising 200-day moving average, it's going to invite mean reversion. Same thing applies in reverse when we get the downward trends. Then declining market breadth, meaning that fewer shares within the market are actually rising. That's a sign of internal market deterioration. You know, it's like pulling the plug out of the bathtub. You don't notice it, what's flowing out all that quickly. We need to be alert to this risk. Failed upside breakouts from trading ranges. Well, they're normal from time to time, but when you have as powerful a trend as we have seen for the, think of the S&P 500 index, then when we have seen very few failed upside breaks, if we start to get an increase in the number of failed upside breaks, there would be obvious implications that the demand factor was less dominant than it had been. And next one, loss of uptrend consistency characteristics. Well, I mentioned one in the previous sentence, which would be the increased failed upside breaks, but then you could get plenty of others, such as the churning activity, which I mentioned in the next line, sideways ranging activity. It'll clearly look different. Breaks in the 200-day moving averages. So there are a number of different ways that loss of uptrend consistency characteristics can show up. But the key point to take away from this is that when a trend is really consistent, it's a powerful market because demand clearly outweighs supply to create that really consistent trend. When the trend begins to lose that consistency, it's because supply is increasing relative to the actual demand. And when we begin to see that, then the risks, of course, are rising, unless there's some clear, dramatic evidence that follows quickly, reaffirming the overall upward trend. Okay, broadening patterns, another characteristic, which would be a loss of consistency against the background of the recent trend. Also, 200-day moving averages, should they start to turn down, they're a lagging indicator. So when you get the moving averages turning down, let alone when resistance is encountered beneath declining 200-day moving averages, well, then you know that very clearly a pattern deterioration has taken place. Another development in a deteriorating uptrend, previous rising lows are replaced by lower rally highs. Well, that's the beginning definition of a downward trend. And also that indices fall faster than they rose to their highs. I think it's a good idea to keep all of these factors in mind when you are assessing these indices. Okay. Here's the Russell 2000, what I've often described as Wall Street's canary in the coal mine. Well, it's fitted down to a very feeble squeak if it hasn't completely gone quiet, as you can see from that toppy characteristic, which stands out very distinctively relative to the consistency of that last stage in the upward trend, which occurred in the fourth quarter of 2013. Next slide. Can you identify the consistency characteristics since that fourth quarter 2013 low? Well, it looks like a staircase, doesn't it? And the downward reactions are of an equal size. It begins to lose form earlier this year, where you see the bigger downside reaction, but it didn't stay down for very long, and bulls regathered, pushed it through to a new high, but they couldn't hold it. Second high found resistance from the same peak above 1200, and now we have a lower high and also a lower low. And if you look very closely, you can see that the MA has also deteriorated. Now, this Russell 2000, it's made up of smaller cap shares than you will see in the NASDAQ 100 or in the S&P 500 or in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So it just shows that, again, some of that water is running out of the bathtub. The weaker shares are, the smaller shares, rather, I should say, are now weaker and underperforming. Next slide. Looking at the Standard & Poor's 500 Index. I often use the term roundophobia when it's up near these big round numbers. The fact is that the big round numbers tend to become targets within trends, up or down. And then when they're reached, people say, well, what next? And that even the pause and thought there can have a subtle effect on the supply-demand balance. But again, you see, if I put it this way, if I asked a question as you look at that chart, have the consistency characteristics changed, yes or no? The short-term answer, or my short-term answer, is no. You still have the rising lows. The downward reactions are of a similar size. You still have the higher highs. But a whole lot can change in this range between roughly 2020 and 1900. Now, to reaffirm this overall upward trend, clearly we would need another break to the upside. However, if we see this moving down and closing below 1900, then that would be breaking the progression of higher reaction lows, and it would also be moving below the 1900 level. And that would certainly be a warning shot, a couple of warning shots across the bows for this somewhat overextended market. And if that break below 1900, or unless that break below 1900 was very quickly reversed, I would assume that the market risk of a correction beyond what we've seen had increased considerably. Looking at the next chart of the Nasdaq 100 index, this is the one that, if we were to see Wall Street get another big run to the upside, perhaps getting quite overextended to the upside, this would be a leading candidate. This would be the leading candidate here because it contains so many of those glamorous tech shares. It's the trend is still consistent. It lost some of that consistency for a while in the beginning of at the beginning of this year, but didn't break down below that 3,400 level and picked up again. And it's a little overextended against the 200-day moving average. And that's, of course, also a 40-week moving average, same thing. And there's also a round of phobia level up there at that 4,000 level. When NASDAQ eventually breaks down, you will know that the market really is experiencing a more significant correction. Next chart of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, well, very similar to the others here, but it has certainly encountered some resistance near this 17,000 level, but the rising lows are still intact. Okay. Just a last point I'll make on that is that some market genius had said it ain't over till it's over. But you see the deteriorating signs on those US indices, and you'll see a number of deteriorating signs on the indices that follow, starting with the next slide of Canada. So it pushed above the high that we had seen in 2008. It was a very, very consistent upward trend with small downward reactions relative to the gains. And it's fallen really quite sharply in here. It's a little bit overextended on the downside, so a little short-term oversold condition in the short term. And it's back in the region of potential support from that 200-day moving average, but it needs a decent rally to revive confidence, I'll put it that way. Mexico, similar. Note how very, very consistent the trend was to the upside, and we've now seen some loss of consistency near the previous high that you can see in 2013. I think this chart is also a good example of the way to use these 200-day moving averages, or more ways to use the 200-day moving averages. You can see that when you get those overextensions, go right back to the left-hand side of the chart, get a good big overextension, it's susceptible to mean reversion. You see that happen over and over again. Ditto on the downside. Look at that big 2008 crash. Well, it becomes wildly overextended relative to the downward declining MA and then bounces almost all the way back to it. It gets back down and tests that low again before then breaking upwards sufficiently to turn the MA back to the upside. Very important market signals. But then note, every time you get that clearly overextended situation, then it pulls back to test the MA. And we're seeing it again here right now. The UK index, certainly a broad range. So question here, what's going on here? Supply and demand clearly in balance, but we have now lost that gradual bias of higher reaction lows, and that is a concern. That, of course, also happened when we had the first high up at this up just a little below the 7,000 level, and it'd be at 6,800 something there, and you had the sharp reaction back down to 6,000. That was not maintained. That declined downwards, but we really haven't been able to break above the high subsequently. And also that decline down to 6,000 that broke the progression of rising lows. Well, it's been broken again in here. And there are a lot of positions that are held up near, above this, approximately above this 6,400 range, level rather, to 6,600 range. So potentially top heavy. Needs a put it another way, it needs a decisive break to a new all-time high to remove that risk. Looking at the Dow Jones Euro Stoxx 50, again, we saw earlier in the year, we saw that sharp downward reaction, which broke the progression of higher reaction lows. Now we have a lower high. If that goes below, a little below the 3,000 level, takes out the previous low, then we'll see a not only a lower rally high, but a lower low, and that would be a clear evidence of deterioration. And it needs, again, this one needs a sustained break up through those two highs that you can recent highs that you've established this year that you can see on the chart to negate that risk. Germany, next slide. Again, look how consistent that chart really was going back to late 2012. I think that's when Mario Draghi came in and established a nice sequence of higher reaction lows, but we're now into very much a broadening pattern here overall, and we've had a lower high beneath that round of phobia 10,000 level and a close much below the 9,000 level would again increase the risks that we were certainly going to see a further corrective phase. Denmark, I believe it's the strongest market in Europe overall. Still got that progression of higher reaction lows. This would not showing anything wrong at the moment, but it would not go up on its own if the others are starting to deteriorate, and you can see where the warning signs would be flashing, and that would be a little below that 700 level on that index. Russia. Well, governance is everything. We say this all the time here, and the Short comment, additional comment is that a favorable regime change would make Russia a buy. What's a favorable regime change? Well, certainly removing Putin would be favorable, but not if he's replaced by his closest KGB apparatchik. Personally, I'd favor Garry Kasparov. That's unlikely, but it would make Russia a screaming buy if it did happen. And if you get someone who does not have that same KGB background replacing Putin, I think Russia's low valuation would make it an interesting recovery candidate, cheap market. Which would benefit enormously from improved governance, which it certainly doesn't have at the moment. And India. Well, I've talked so much about India, I will not need to say much about this, except it's one of my very favorite markets here for the medium to longer term. A little again, it's overextended relative to the MA at this stage, but I think that corrections are going to be a buying opportunity far more often than not, and I think this index could be one whole lot higher come the end of Modi's term in 5 years 5 years' time. Or I'll put it this way. I think that India will remain a medium to longer term relative outperformer so long as Narendra Modi is in charge of the government. And an earlier forecast that I had given really when Modi announced that he was entering the race, and that was down near just below that 18,000 level. Was that 5 years of Modi with a majority, and you could double the index? Okay, Vietnam, another favorite, which I've shown in my earlier presentations, or again most recently last month. And that last sharpish reaction that we saw this year, earlier this year, that occurred solely because of China's aggression in Vietnam's, what everybody else regards as Vietnam's territorial waters. So that is a risk, but if China, doesn't wave the big red fist too often. This is a market that should do extremely well over the longer term. In China's Shanghai A-share index, this is coming back into form. The government was trying to rein in property prices, dealing with corruption problems. It had to rein in the overbought property market, where a lot of speculation was taking place. That did squash the stock market performance, the A-share performance, for a while. But the government is now favoring a stock market rally here, and it's easing up on that squeeze. And we see the evidence here, this nice saucering pattern, and it's a cheap market, as I've mentioned on many occasions. And Hong Kong, again, I've got this biggest risk if China erodes its freedoms. That sharp reaction that you saw 4 weeks ago, approximately, was caused by the protests, understandable protests within Hong Kong, because China had announced that it was going to vet candidates for governance within Hong Kong, which effectively means that they would only appoint governments that would take their orders from Beijing. Well, the Hong Kong Chinese don't want that, and understandably so. It is oversold here in the short term, and the demonstrators at least are no longer clogging up the economy, or at least certainly not to the same extent. And so this is a very cheap market at this level, and single figure multiple, and for the index, and an attractive yield, which is closer to 4% than 3%. Australia, it's a long-term favorite of mine, which I mentioned on many occasions. It has lost some form in here in the short term, and there is a risk that most stock markets are going to lose form here in the short term. So next slide. I'm saying at this stage of the stock market cycle, I favor previous laggards as they begin to show relative strength. And is a point I've often made in our service, and also in these presentations that I've made. What I would The flip side of that would be that I would be extremely cautious about shares that have accelerated higher and have very fancy multiples. Because if we get a 10% correction, 10% plus correction on Wall Street, and the risk of that is high, then those expensive shares will be subject to a lot of profit taking. Overall, I feel that we are likely to see several years of a choppy period. That's not a disaster by any means, but it would mean that you want to be careful about leverage. And I would not have any leverage in here right now. And I would also say that you don't want to chase things on the upside, or if you do, you want to be sure that you can move very quickly to reduce exposure when those shares are showing signs that they're actually losing momentum. I think that a choppy market environment, which could be over the next 3 to 5 years or so at a guess, and it can only be a guess when you make a forecast of that far into the future, but is that 10% plus corrections would supply good buying opportunities. My concern, though, that I mentioned earlier, is that the high leverage that we see in the market now, you get a 10% correction and that leverage will start to come down. And if you get another 10% correction, and on average we get two of these a year, that again would reduce the leverage somewhat. But the leverage is easily capable of causing a 10% plus correction to morph into what I would describe as a cyclical, a bear market, and that would be a 20 to 30% decline. And those occur at irregular lengthy medium term intervals. And I would think that we will definitely see at least one of those cyclical bear trends within the next 3 to 5 years. Could easily get one or two of those cyclical bearish phases. Then beyond that, I think that we will get a resumption of the long-term secular uptrend that I've often talked about, and that Owen has often talked about. And on the next slide, you'll see the long-term bull factors for stock markets. So I'm looking well ahead now and taking in the next decade or considerably longer. And these points, well, they'll be familiar to you for the most part, I believe. Accommodative monetary policies, well, that's really the big one. And actually, we still have accommodative monetary policies here right now, even though markets are losing form here in the short term because of the supply that's been added to the market, and also because of perhaps concern over the leverage, concern over geopolitical factors. But again, monetary policy, that really is the big one, and it is still accommodative. And that's why, even despite the leverage that we see in the market, I do not expect a really serious secular bear trend such as we saw in 2008 and as we saw in 2000. Okay, second point, an accelerating rate of technological innovation. Hugely, hugely important. You've heard me mention this on many, many occasions. Corporations, well, we all benefit from it, but corporations benefit most of all from it. It can also lead to faster rate of obsolescence, but that's not necessarily a bad thing for the overall for the overall market. The lower energy prices in real terms, thanks to technological innovation, and that we are already seeing. It's actually coming in. It's been a long-term forecast of mine, and necessary to help to fuel a secular bull market. And I think, you know, the combination of huge technological advances in oil discovery and drilling, then fracking, then all the renewables that are coming on stream, and hopefully we'll even get back to the new generation of molten salt nuclear reactors. All that would bring energy prices down in real terms. Okay, triumph of capitalism, both democratic and authoritarian. This certainly wasn't the case when the last secular bull market was beginning back in 1983, and it's a hugely important point. Because, well, look at India as a good example of that, which was run as a, well, sort of an old Soviet economic model. Well, under Modi, it's going to be a dynamic capitalistic environment overall. China, it's authoritarian in China, but it's certainly a capitalistic model. Globalization. This is hugely important because it levels the playing field somewhat, and it enables that has downsides as well. But it's good for the long term. Because it enables developing markets to develop much, much more quickly. That can temporarily interrupt progress in developed markets, as we've seen over the last number of years. But it's a bullish, bullish long-term factor, to repeat that point. Middle-class growth in emerging markets, hugely important, and that is so good for and basically any of the companies and sectors that service that middle class growth around the world. And those are sectors that have performed well. They get over expensive or too expensive from time to time, as we've seen recently. But when valuations normalize or come back in line with what we associate as sensible valuations, then they're very, very attractive sectors. and continued growth in the global population. That's another bullish factor for not only leading to further middle class growth, but also, again, just more demand for goods generally. Okay, going on to the next slide. Now we're leaving stock markets and we're into the bond market sector. You've got a 50-year chart there of the U.S. Treasury yields, and I feel that this is a base building process that is taking place. It's a very lengthy base building process, likely to remain lengthy, but this is marking the end of that big secular bull market in long-dated government bonds. I think there's a good chance that rates will move higher slowly. And when you get above that 4% level, as I said in the notes, that's a probable base completion overall. So again, I think that will take time. And I don't think we're going to get anything back like the move up to nearly 16 we saw back in that early 1980s period. Okay, and why do I feel we won't get back to anything like that? Well, globalization would be certainly the first thing that I would cite. Okay, next. Next chart here. This is this long-term graph here showing the total total return pattern in this Merrill Lynch Treasury 10 years futures total return index. Now, you break that lateral red line in there, and that will represent top formation completion. And I regard bond markets, they don't feel risky here right now. They may not be risky. They probably aren't risky right now, but the long-term risk is considerable. And that I think that chart says it all. Okay, U.S. dollar index. It is building another base. It's at the very late stage of this additional base formation. And why is the dollar able to bottom out here? Well, the U.S. economy is doing less badly than a good many other developed country economies. Would be one reason. Also, the dollar had an awfully long bear market trend. And but the big one, though, I think is the energy independence, virtual energy independence that the USA has, and of course also the accelerated rate of technological innovation, which is something that the it's a area that the United States still dominates, so hugely important. Next line. Well, this is people we talk about a stronger dollar here, but look at this. It's still a fiat currency, and look at the loss of purchasing power that occurs over time. And I don't think we are. A question, well, as a fiat currency, I don't think we're ever likely to see it appreciate in value over time. Next slide, gold. Well, really critical juncture down here. I think that you'd expect at least temporary steadying here. But complicated situation here. There's so many factors that one can mention that people look at or people do mention here in terms of the actual gold price. One that I think that we or I haven't perhaps always paid enough attention to here is think in terms of scale. You don't quite see the beginning of the bull market here, but you see most of it on this chart. But if you get a 10-year uptrend, good, powerful 10-year uptrend, That ends in a sort of a euphoric acceleration, as you can see on that on that chart. Then the bigger top area. Has it been coming down for long enough? And that's the point that does still concern me. In other words, another way to put that, have we reached a revulsion stage in for gold? And if you think back to the very early 2000s, a lot of people, well, had said long since lost interest in gold back at that time. But I think that there's still plenty of bulls around, and that could certainly that I'm thinking particularly in terms of the West here right now, and they haven't given up the ghost yet. And I'm thinking also of traders. I've seen recent data on this, which says that the bear traders are again, this is leveraged bear traders have twice the size of positions that long traders in futures, gold futures, have. Now, so I'm not talking about the long-term gold bulls holding gold bullion, but these investment banks, and they have pretty much all gathered or lined up here together, following the same policy, and they've been talking this gold down for most of the year, and they're still talking about a thousand, some of them, or at least Goldman Sachs clearly is. It's an interesting situation because they're presumably borrowing a great deal of gold from central banks to actually short it. And what about the demand side here? Because the lower this comes down, the more dangerous it gets for the bear traders, because you get serious investment demand coming in. We are seeing in the investment buying of gold, but it's been nothing like as aggressive as the leveraged short selling of gold. I think to try to put these points in perspective, the Indians will certainly be buying more gold. The Chinese will certainly be buying more gold. But they won't be doing that with leveraged positions. They'll be going for the actual bullion or coins for their actual purchases. I think well, I'm going to go on and show you the next chart, which says a lot here right now. Here, this is you've probably seen this before. And I've shown it a number of times, particularly back in that period in 2000 and onwards, the beginning of this century, because that showed how wildly overextended the Dow was relative to gold. So gold was on its knees while the last secular bull market on Wall Street was going into its climactic ending. Well, fell all the way back down to about six, as you can see, and getting well down into the historic lows. But it's in an orderly upward trend. Which now, and again, how's this actually constructed? It's a Dow Jones Industrial Average divided by the price of gold. So the Dow is still outperforming gold. Well, a 10% plus correction could change that, and a cyclical bear market could change that for at least the medium term. But when it comes to strong investment positions in here in the West, at any rate, gold is kind of the forgotten article here by many investors, because they're running long positions in stock markets, and they're also, many of them, still running long, very big long positions in government bond markets. So watch this chart. When it breaks those rising lows that you see, that will show that the demand for gold relative to the Dow is improving. And I don't think we'll see this, right? Well, you never know. But I was going to say, I don't think we'll see it get it back up anywhere near those highs, or it would take a very long time for that to happen. Okay, next chart, silver. Again, I always describe it as high beta gold, very oversold here in the short term. Had by far the bigger run to the upside, and has had a bigger pullback also to the downside. When gold is, so silver is still underperforming gold, and when silver is outperforming gold, then you will know that you're getting a decent rally in precious metals. And Brent crude oil. Now, you see the comment here, no more price spikes such as 2008 despite turmoil in many producer regions and an eventual global economic recovery. It's a long-term forecast, obviously, but this is hugely important. It's putting in oil producers under pressure, because they were spending as if this thing could only go up in price, this commodity could only rise in price. But the long-term outlook, no. It's oversold here in the short term, so I wouldn't be at all surprised to see a temporary rally. But with every day that passes, the risk of getting a move back up well above $100 a barrel decreases. Okay. And that's it. That's a wrap. Although, if you look, you'll also notice that there's one more slide there, which I did not discuss last night because I was running over time. But there's that Wall Street. Is the Wall Street's next secular bull market underway? And you could say, yes, we've moved far enough through those two previous highs to indicate that that's the case. That doesn't prove you're going to get a secular bull market, but I think all the characteristics are there. And they're listed, or the factors that would contribute to it are listed there. I do feel, though, that there is a very high risk that you see at least one and probably two cyclical bear markets over the next 3 to 5 years, and that would be somewhat similar to that downward phase that you saw in 1981 through 1982 into 1982, where you saw that pullback. That's the risk, but it's a very acceptable risk overall. So, however nervous you are here right now about the possibility of a 10% correction or somewhat more, those go with the stock market territory. Obviously, you want to be a little bit careful. Favor the autonomies. You can build an entire portfolio based on the autonomies, in my opinion. But just avoid the most speculative excesses, particularly in this period now that we have a maturing run on the within the uptrends that we have been seeing. And there you are. All the very best. And I will do a normal daily audio also.